Welcome to Have You Heard, the AABP podcast. I'm Dr. Fred Gingrich, and I'm welcoming Dr. Christine Navarre from Louisiana State University. Welcome, Christine.
Good morning.
So, Christine, tell us a little bit about your veterinary career, where you went to school, and what you've been doing.
So, I graduated from Louisiana State University in 1990, so I'm celebrating 30 years. And when I finished school, I went into a mostly dairy practice in Northeast Texas. Went to Texas A&M for an internal medicine residency, spent some time at Auburn University in the beef hospital there, and for the last 15 years, I've been the extension veterinarian for the LSU Ag Center.
Great. So today we're talking about internal parasites, and what's the current state? You know, I know that there's been a lot of discussion at meetings that I go to, and you've done several presentations on resistance. So what's the current state of antihelminthic resistance when it comes to internal parasites in beef cattle in the U.S.?
Well, it's definitely a rising problem. We know we've had resistance to Cuperia, which is a parasite mainly of young cattle, less than a year old. That's been documented for years. What's really alarming is that we're starting to get reports of ostratagia resistance, which is a really pathogenic parasite. It impacts older cattle more too. And so we really need to think about what we're doing these days from a parasite control standpoint so we can slow this resistance down.
And, you know, I know we've talked some in the past about refugia. And we have both producers and veterinarians listening to our podcast. You know, what is refugia? Why is it important? And how can we incorporate that into our parasite control programs for beef cattle?
Well, refugia is a really important concept because it's going to help us hopefully slow resistance down. So I talk about good worms and bad worms, which might seem a little bit silly, but it helps me understand it. And I think it helps other people understand it. So the bad worms, we've kind of always thought about all worms as bad and let's eliminate them all. And that's really one of the reasons we're in this pickle that we're in with the dewormers not working. And so bad worms are those worms that have the genetics to fight off the anthelminyx or make them resistant to the anthelminyx. Refugia is a term that is really about good worms or worms that don't have those genes. And what we need to do when we treat an entire group of cattle with an effective dewormer, we eliminate all the good worms and the only thing left are some resistant or bad worms. And there might not be very many of them, but over years of using these products, those worms have built up. And now what we're trying to do is we need strategies to keep a few of the good worms around to breed to the bad worms so it slows down the propagation of those resistance genes. So it's really kind of a genetic strategy, a genetic worm strategy, but that's what we need to do. And it's going to make us more long-term sustainable. It's not an easy thing to do to figure out how to keep refugia, but that's what we need to do.
So it's a bad idea for producers to, you know, I know that in my practice experience, some producers might run the cattle through at a certain time of year, pick a dewormer off the shelf, and administer it to every cow with no diagnostics or leaving some animals non-dewormed. Practically speaking, you know, what should they do in a situation? You know, do they not deworm every animal, or what should they do?
Yeah, there's different strategies. You really need diagnostics first, and so I think we're probably using dewormers in herds that we don't need to because they may not have that that pressure. It's difficult to tell whether or not you're going to get an economic benefit from that. And I think going back and actually maybe doing some on-farm trials to say, yeah, this dewormer is giving me this benefit, and knowing which dewormers work. So doing some fecal egg count reductions. The refugia strategies, there's really kind of two ways to think of it. We're not going to deworm everybody. So if that's a cow-calf, for instance, you've got a group of cows with calves inside, you may decide in certain parts of the country that you need to deworm those calves. Sometimes you don't, but we're not going to deworm the cows. Now that means that we need nutrition, other stressors to kind of be at bay because parasites take advantage when we have other stressors. Another strategy might be, let's say we've got a group of replacement heifers, and those are, you know, animals that we need to make sure we don't let parasites take over. And we might only deworm 90% of them and leave 10% of them not dewormed. And those 10% then have some refugia in them, and then they propagate the pastures. Another thing that we can do is, if we're going to deworm an entire group, is pay attention to what we're doing to the pasture. So if we deworm an entire group and turn them onto a clean pasture, then we're only going to have bad worms on that pasture going forward. But if we turn the cattle out, let them kind of seed the pasture with some refugia, and then maybe get them up or turn them onto a contaminated pasture. We also need to kind of look at following where we're putting cattle, different group, age groups of cattle. So pasture management, movement of cattle, all of that really plays in. So it's not an easy strategy. It's something you've got to do. Each individual ranch needs to come up with a strategy with their veterinarian.
And that probably varies by where they're located in the country. Is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And it varies, you know, the climate impacts, the parasites, the rainfall impacts the parasites. So you have some generalities depending on where in the country, but then every year the weather's different on any individual ranch. And then you also have different histories. So some ranches have not been deworming very much, and they may not have problems, and the dewormers work, and we just need to keep them working. And you have some farms that have been deworming a lot, and they're building up a lot of resistance. And so it really needs to be tailored to each individual operation. It's very different cow-calf versus stalker versus feedlot.
So just using a different dewormer every year is not a good strategy to prevent resistance.
No, and in fact, the current recommendation is, after we decide who we're going to deworm, we're going to actually use two classes of dewormers, because even though the worms that survive that are multi-drug resistant, there's not very many of them. And so if we use that with, you have to use a refugia program with that to not have multi-drug resistance and speed that up. But if we do that, then we're really knocking those worms back. And because we just, you know, one product, if we continue to just, well, I've got resistance to this group, if I switch to the other group, but I don't change what we've been doing over the past, you know, three decades, we're going to end up right back in the same place. And there's none that I'm aware of, no new products on the horizon. Right. And even if there's some in the pipeline that we don't know about yet, it's going to be 5 to 10 years before those would come to market.
Right. And you talked about diagnostics first. And so that involves collecting some fecal samples, bringing their veterinarian in. Are there any general guidelines about how many animals they need to test? Does that depend upon the age of the animal, et cetera?
No, really, actually, you know, if you get 10, I mean, excuse me, 15 to 20 samples out of a group, no matter the size of the group,
okay,
different age groups. So if I'm testing cows and calves, I want, you know, 15 to 20 from the cows, 15 to 20 from the calves. And really the hard part is, I get this question a lot, you know, well, I got a fecal of this number in a cow. What's the threshold for treatment? And we really don't know that number. And that's where we have to track some fecals over time, see in certain situations, are those fecal egg counts going up? In certain situations, are they going down? Kind of learning that on an individual operation. And then again, actually deworming a group and maybe not deworming a group and seeing what, you know, weighing those calves and looking at reproduction and seeing, did it actually make a difference on this particular operation? Because there's a lot of things that influence the fecal egg count. So it's really about surveillance. The fecal egg count reduction is what tells us whether or not those dewormers are working. So we need to take some fecals, then we deworm the cattle, and then we come back 2 weeks later and we get fecals. And the hard part is we have to get fecals on the same cows to compare. Okay. You can't just get the first 15 that come up again, unfortunately. And then we compare the pre and the post egg counts to see how well did our dewormer work.
Right. And that's, although that's labor, that's veterinary cost, it's well worth it to make sure that we're preserving the effectiveness of these products.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at the cost of deworming an entire herd versus target dewarming. And even when you're doubling up on classes, so people say, well, you know, I've got to give two dewormers, that's double the cost. But if you're really looking at it, in most cases when people do this, they're actually saving money by doing the diagnostics. Even though you're adding the cost of diagnostics, you're adding the cost of doubling up, you're not deworming all the animals. And you're really targeting those treatments. It requires some labor and some time, but in the long run, I think you end up figuring out what you need to do without having to have so many diagnostics up front.
Okay. So, you know, we talked earlier about involving your veterinarian, but for our AABP members that are listening, what does that veterinarian need to know about the farm or ranch to develop good parasite control programs? Is it okay for the producer just to drop off 20 sample jars and the veterinarian looks under the microscope and then calls them up on the phone? What's recommended there?
No, you really need to be out on the farm or ranch. And again, you need to look at, you know, because things like whether if you're planting winter rye, whether you've done a prepared seed bed versus overseeding, then you're going to have different levels of contamination on those pastures. Are these permanent pastures? Are they rotating? That really tells you a lot about the contamination. And then where your young cattle are. So I tell people, you know, move the heifer pasture around. Those cattle, you know, shed a lot. They're susceptible. And when you have the same group of cattle that are susceptible on the same pasture year after year, then you get buildup. And so if you can bring in some dry cows on those pastures instead. So it's really an integrated strategy. You got to have the diagnostics, you have to have the knowledge. The other thing that's really critical is the veterinarians need to integrate this with other management and other parts of the herd health program. So it's easy to kind of talk about this parasite control. It's not easy, but it's easier when you just focus on that. But there's all kinds of priorities on the ranch that we have to integrate it all together. And that's where you need the veterinarian to actually be boots on the ground.
Absolutely. And, you know, I always told my producers when I was in practice, you know, you got to look at your veterinarian as an investment, not an expense.
Right,
and I think that applies here.
Yes. And I think if producers will do that, they'll realize that they're actually going to save some money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And have healthier cattle,
yes,
too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked a little bit about, you know, using two classes of dewormers. Are there any other best practices for using dewormers that veterinarians and producers should be thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. Making sure we use the right dose. So I think even those of us who are very experienced at looking at cattle and even weighing cattle, adult cattle especially, you can underestimate their weight.
Sure.
Usually 100 to 200 pounds is actually research data. So making sure we use the right dose, making sure that we get it in them when we switch to some of these oral dewormers, you know, some the application and the dosing, they can spit some of it out. Storing it properly. So, you know, when it says room temperature and you're either, you know, here in Ohio where it's really cold today, or you're in Louisiana where it might be 95 degrees, those products, even though they may be in date and not expired, they may not be working anymore. So you really want to make sure you're storing those products properly. And then, you know, I try to tell producers, and this is definitely based on a lot of other factors, but poor on dewormers, even though from a beef quality assurance standpoint, I love them, it's thought that they may have contributed to this problem because the dosing is erratic. Even though you dose a cow, they lick it off. So I tell producers to really avoid pour-ons unless you have another reason to give them besides just deworming.
Yeah, and that's good advice because oftentimes it's the go-to just because of ease of administration.
Absolutely. I mean, and you get some external parasite control,
yeah,
but there's resistance building up to lice and some of those external parasites. So we really want to use them sparingly.
So how about some other challenges in developing parasite control programs that, you know, that you've come across?
Yeah. So I mentioned, you know, trying to integrate this with everything else. One of the problems that we have in parts of the country are liver flukes. And the timing of liver fluke treatment is very specific. And the problem is we don't have products that only get flukes. So when I treat for flukes, I'm also impacting my nematodes, which is where we're having the resistance. And so it puts me in a pickle. I might not want to deworm my adult cows for astrotasia because I want to have some refugia, but then I have to, flukes, and I have to come back because flukes are, you know, in certain areas, flukes are a really big problem, and they can be deadly. They really interrupt reproduction. So really kind of, we really need a product that's only for flukes, but we don't have that right now. Same thing with external parasites, trying to figure out, do I use a poor one that gets internal and external, or do I use something that gets internal and then use another product that only gets external, that's, you know, an EPA product.
Yeah.
So those are just challenges that we have to work through.
Absolutely. Great. Great. And then, you know, we've talked a lot here about using your veterinarian for your parasite control program, for your total herd health program. You know, what should producers do? We have producers that listen. You know, what should producers do? You know, it was common in my area. The producer would go grab the easiest product. They'd price shop. They'd look at, you know, you just talked about the products that treat multiple different, you know, external, internal parasites, flukes. And producers might feel, well, I'm getting more bang for my buck if I use this Poron that gets internal parasites, external parasites, et cetera, et cetera. You know, what should producers do to mitigate this real problem that they're seeing with resistance?
Yeah, I mean, we really need to get out there they need to get with their veterinarian, get them on the farm, develop that relationship so that they can start to track this over time. This is not, we're going to do some testing and then develop a program and be done. This is a long-term relationship and something that needs to be tracked over time and developed over time. And it really takes an intimate knowledge of the farmer ranch and the management, because parasites are really, they take advantages of other mistakes we make in management, particularly nutrition, and we don't want that. And that's where the veterinarian can say, hey, we might need to bring in a nutritionist. We might need to bring in, you know, a grazing specialist or a forage specialist to really get our nutrition down, because that gives you a leg up on helping fight the effects of those parasites. But you need the diagnostics. You need the knowledge of that veterinarian. That veterinarian knows the biology of those parasites, knows he can get with, you know, the experts, the parasitologists in their areas to say what happens to parasites in our area, and then take that knowledge and really tailor it. And again, in the long, it's some work and some cost up front, but in the long run, as you start, one of the other things I like producers to do is start looking at, well, that cow is, you know, she's skinny all the time, and really start selecting cows that don't need our help. And then we get calves that don't need our help. So it's once you start doing that and you get a herd that fights parasites by themselves, then labor goes down, costs go down.
So. Absolutely. Great, great recommendations all around. So we always like to close out our podcast with a personal recommendation from our guests. So Christine, do you have a favorite book you're reading or recommend for our audience?
Yeah, so one of the my favorite books that I read, and I actually listened to it on tape while I drive around the state of Louisiana, is the book called Grit: The Power of Passion and Perseverance by Angela Duckworth. It's just a really great book about you know, what it takes to be successful, and some really good information.
Fantastic. I'm going to put that on my reading list. So thanks everyone for listening. If you'd like more information about parasite resistance, refugia, and developing these programs, Christine has done some talks at AABP conferences, and you can access our conference talks through our BCI CE portal or on the mobile app. And I would encourage you to listen to those talks so you could see the presentations. And producers out there, I encourage you to contact your veterinarian to develop these total herd health programs. Utilize the expertise of your veterinarian. Thanks so much, Christine.
Thank you.